For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Hour number two of the Rob Brown Radio program starts now. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Fan Upstate. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Spectacular to have you, my dear friends. I am Rob Brown, the great one, Lonzo, back in the network studio in charge of pretty much everything today. You can be a part of the show. The text line is open, 71307, 71307. Start your text with FAN, F-A-N. And we'll read them on the air. 71307. That is the number to be a part of the radio program. Texter said, Rob, from what I've read, you just made the same case the lawyers from Clemson and FSU have made. The grant of rights has wording about winning conference bowl games. Yeah, that is effectively, Texter. That is the argument that has been made by the attorneys from Florida State and Clemson. Speaking of, we do have a lawsuit update. It will actually be one of the items coming up here briefly in the water cooler cheat sheet. I'll clue you in on what the most recent development is, but that is a part of the argument that has been made in the lawsuits filed by Florida State and Clemson against the ACC. Effectively, the argument that they have made is because of the fact that, in their opinion, the ACC did not make the best possible effort to stay competitive during the growth of expansion of the other conferences. And because of the fact that those conferences have not just expanded, but have definitively gotten better because of the expansion, and because of the fact that, and again, this is one of those things that is likely going to be hard to prove definitively, as it has been hard for me to prove definitively when we've had this argument. Because the ACC did not do the best job it could have done to make sure that it was as competitive as the other conferences that have exploded in both growth and talent over the past couple of years, they are arguing that it has actually made it harder, more difficult, for Clemson and Florida State to stay competitive on a national scale. And I have no doubt that when these lawsuits are ultimately and finally argued in front of judges, as I believe that they now will be, based on the update we got that's about to be part of your water cooler cheat sheet, based on the fact that the other conferences have passed them, it's going to make it more difficult for those teams to be able to get in when the reputation of the ACC basically hampers them, holds them down a little bit. Florida State will make the argument that if the ACC would have done more to be more competitive and would have had the same social paradigm that it was viewed through as the SEC and the Big Ten, they would have played for a national championship last year. They are going to argue, and I think accurately, though it will be difficult to empirically prove, that the reason they didn't get in last year, and I do believe this to be true, is because college football looked and went, the SEC has more money, it makes more money, and we need to make as much as we can, so we got to pick an SEC school, and Alabama happened to be right there. So all of that being said, I do think it is part of it. And since we've teased it now, ladies and gentlemen, it is 7:04 in the morning. You got just a tick under 55 minutes and some change to be in the office, to sit down, to respond to all those annoying emails from the boss this AM. And then once you do that, it'll be what? 8:07, 8:08. Time to take a well-earned, well-deserved break to go talk some sports. And if you're going to talk sports, you got to know what's going on in the world of sports. And if you need to know what's going on in the world of sports, you need this. It is the Water Cooler Cheat Sheet, the top three sports stories that you need to know before you get to the office and start talking sports this lovely, lovely Friday morning. A lovelier Friday morning than we have had in a very, very long time. A lovely Friday morning because tomorrow, my dear friends, college football is upon us. We have waited, anticipated, and the fire in our eyes has never shined brighter, my dear friends. Football is here. Let's dive headfirst into item number one. We mentioned it a minute ago, a little, I don't think it was foreshadowing because I actually told you what we were going to talk about. I just didn't give you the details. I will right now. Florida State and the Atlantic Coast Conference have concluded their court-mandated mediation in their legal battle in the state of Florida. According to the filing, representatives of the school and the conferences began in-person mediation back on August 13th. Here we are 10 days later, and a two-sentence joint notice of mediation compliance was released yesterday. One of the two sentences said, quote, although the parties did not resolve this matter, the parties continued discussions, end quote. But the official mediation between FSU and Clemson has come to its conclusion without any resolution to the lawsuit. Of course, as you know, because you've been listening to the show for the duration of the battle, there are two lawsuits right now that are in place between Florida State and the Atlantic Coast Conference. One of them was filed by the school against the conference in Leon County, Florida, where Tallahassee is. The other, of course, was a countersuit filed back against Florida State by the ACC. That one in Mecklenburg County, North Carolina. That's Charlotte, where the ACC's headquarters are currently located. Judges in both states have allowed those lawsuits to move forward. In the Florida case, as is precedent in the Sunshine State, the judge ordered a mandatory effort at mediation between the two sides. They engaged in that mediation back on the 13th, 10 days later. There is no agreement yet in place. Leon County Judge John Cooper, who is overseeing FSU's lawsuit against the ACC in Florida, ordered the two sides into non-binding mediation back in April, which is a common practice by a judge to try to initiate a quick resolution in a case that could take years to play out in court. Now, again, they've gone through the mediation. No agreement was met by the two sides. Neither the conference nor the school is permitted to speak publicly about what was discussed in the mediation session, but ACC Commissioner Jim Phillips is on the offensive. He yesterday was on ESPN and said, quote, we are going to fight. And that's the way it should be when you sign an agreement twice, willingly sign, and that you are part of a group that comes together and decides that this is what you want to do for the next 20 years, and you should be held accountable for that, end quote. Of course, these ACC's media rights contract with ESPN runs through 2036, though the network has an option to end the deal in 2027. ACC members also signed a grant of rights that runs concurrent with the ESPN deal and hands over the broadcast rights to the school's home football games through the length of the agreement. FSU and Clemson say the value of the deal leaves them at a disadvantage when compared to schools in the Big Ten and the Southeastern Conference, a sentiment that I very much agree with. And the longer that this ACC deal remains in place, I think the easier it will be for Florida State and Clemson to prove that to be the case. But that mediation has concluded between FSU and the ACC in Florida with no agreement reached, meaning that we will take the next step. On Monday's edition of the show, we will speak with John Blau of the Post and Courier. John Blau has been covering these lawsuits extensively on the behalf of the Post and Courier, at least as it pertains to the Clemson side. But obviously, as Clemson and Florida State are both locked into these lawsuits, everything that happens on both sides matters to Los Tigres. So we'll talk to John Blau on Monday and get his thoughts on this upset. Let's go to item number two. This I find very interesting. The Colorado football program had an assistant coach by the name of Trevor Riley. Had, because Trevor Riley resigned his position from the University of Colorado coaching staff. That is, of course, Deion Sanders' coaching staff. We did not know why.
Coach Prime.
Now we have a bit of an idea. According to Sports Illustrated, in a report that came out yesterday, former assistant coach Trevor Riley told Sports Illustrated that he traveled to the Middle East during the past holiday season to try and secure funding from Saudi Arabia's public investment fund for the Buffaloes NIL program. Riley resigned as the team's special teams coordinator on August 1st. In his resignation letter to Colorado Athletic Director Rick George and head football coach Deion Sanders, Riley claimed that he was placed in charge of NIL activities with his special teams duties and expressed frustration over attempting to raise funds. Ultimately, those efforts fell through due to what he said was lack of support from the athletic department. Riley wrote in a letter, quote, "You paid me $90,000 a year and let me handle special teams. I did all this work in your name and was told to pursue it. I burned through all my contacts in my Mormon community, which is worth about $3 trillion. Now I can't get these people to answer my calls because I just found out today that none of my endeavors will happen. I even went to Saudi Arabia and got a meeting with the Saudis who were interested in pursuing business. I have email receipts to prove it, and you guys let it fall flat on its face," end quote. Riley went on in the letter to explain that he acted on his own, quote, "did nothing illegal," end quote, and was not asked to pursue those streams of revenue for NIL. That was confirmed by Colorado Athletic Department to Front Office Sports. A department spokesperson said in an email to Perez, quote, "According to Trevor Riley himself, he acted on his own accord and is no longer an employee of the university." Blueprint Sports, which operates Colorado's NIL Collective, 5430 Alliance, in addition to those of 26 other schools, told Front Office Sports that they were unaware of Riley's efforts and had nothing to do with the outreach to a sovereign fund. They released a statement that said, quote, "We want to clarify that Trevor Riley has never been authorized or directed to speak or advocate on behalf of 5430 Alliance in Saudi Arabia. Since our launch in March 2024, all funding and initiatives have been managed solely within domestic channels and are entirely unrelated to Mr. Riley's work. Any claims suggesting otherwise are unfounded and patently false," end quote. My man went after the Mormon Church and the Saudi Arabian Public Investment Fund, of course, the organization responsible for the creation of and existence of the LIV Golf Tour, got straight up rejected, and or Colorado said, yeah, we're not going to do that, and bailed out, which, frankly, I get it. I don't blame him. I understand. I get it. So this is a wild story that all of this happened. Colorado had to, at least to some degree, know that he was reaching out to Saudi Arabian sources for money. Again, this is one of the other things I've said about the LIV Tour. Remember, the whole premise of the LIV Tour being funded by the Saudi Arabian PIF, and I know it is a term that when this conversation was really at its peak a while back, some of you guys were like, can we stop? Can we stop with this term? But the goal of the PIF always has been, and always will be, to whitewash Saudi Arabia's legacy as a massive human rights violator. And when they started the LIV Tour, the effort was to have it stick around for so long that that was normalized, that working with the Saudi Arabian government was normalized, that allowing the Saudis to get involved with American sports, regardless of their human rights violations, is okay. And very clearly, at least to some degree, it is working. I will say this. Good on Colorado for letting that fruit die on the vine. Good on the Colorado Buffaloes for not allowing Trevor Riley to pursue that any further and for allowing that deal to never come to fruition. Let's very quickly get to item number three. Spencer Schwellenbach went 6.2 innings, gave up just three hits and two runs. Cade 9 in a solid outing last night as the Atlanta Braves get a 3-2 win over the Philadelphia Phillies and have closed the gap in the National League East to 6 games. Atlanta wins the series against Philly 2-1 with the effort last night, a 10-hit effort for the Atlanta Brave offense that included a 3-for-3 night with an RBI off of a home run for Adam Duvall before he was replaced by Jared Kelenic late in the game. Duvall had the dinger last night. RBI also recorded by Matty Ice, Matt Olson, and by Gio Urshela. Of course, Urshela picked up off of waivers a couple of days ago. He was DFA'd by the Detroit Tigers earlier in the week when Austin Riley took a ball off of the hand last Sunday. Urshela stepped in to that role, immediately started getting the start, and paid off for the Bravos last night. Got himself an RBI as the Braves win 3-2 over the Phillies. That moves them now to 68-59. They are now 6 games back of the Philadelphia Phillies. However, the Mets also won again. They are on a heater right now. And the New York Mets now just 1.5 games back of the Atlanta Braves. Why is that important? Because the Braves currently hold the 3rd wild card spot as it stands right now. There are only 3. Atlanta owns one of them in the National League, and the Mets are now 1.5 games back of that final wild card spot with just about 38 games left to play. The Arizona Diamondbacks are 3.5 games up on Atlanta for the top wild card spot. The Padres are 3 games up on Atlanta for the second wild card spot. And the New York Mets 1.5 games back of Atlanta for the 3rd wild card spot. Everybody else, the Giants, Cardinals, Cubs, all 4 or more games back of the 3rd wild card spot. So that's where we stand right now in Major League Baseball. Either way, a gut out series win for the Atlanta Braves last night. Real, real happy about that one. We'll talk some more Braves ball later in the show. We'll also get you your Week 0 college football viewer's guide, all coming up on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
It is the Fan Upstate. It is the Rob Brown Show. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Rob, the great one, Lonzo with you here. A couple of little technical difficulties there during the break, but we got it worked out because that is what champions do. Dudes, they rise to the occasion, and hence we have risen and roll on with the show. I got a few more things I wanted to get to. We talked a little bit. We've been talking in this hour every day this week. A lot of college football as the season is upon us, finally. Week 0 football starts up tomorrow at noon, FSU and Georgia Tech, as we have mentioned a couple of times so far. Let's get to this, and I'll bring this back later in the show since we got a little short change for time here. What teams, we talked yesterday about the teams that are considered contenders, but for a variety of reasons could ultimately be left out of the college football playoff. Let's go the other direction. Let's talk about some teams that maybe aren't really being discussed that might ultimately get into the college football playoffs this year, because I've got a few of them. Here's one of them. We've talked about this team a number of times, and I got a feeling we'll be talking about this team a number of times during the regular season. That team is the NC State Wolfpack. I have brought up NC State a couple of times and given you a couple of different reasons for it. Number one, Grayson McCall. Grayson McCall was excellent at Coastal Carolina. Anybody who followed the Grayson McCall era for the Chanticleers is well versed in what Grayson McCall is capable of. That is pretty much anything that you need a high-level college quarterback to do. Now, will he be able to do it against better competition? Will he be able to do it against elevated defenses in the ACC? That is yet to be seen. We will see it next Saturday when the Wolfpack get their season started. But there's another element to that. I'm also talking about the fact that Dave Doran has put together one of the best offenses. I am going to say the best offense that he has had during his time at NC State. They bring back four of five starters across the offensive line. Their skill position talent is very, very veteran. And then you add on to the fact that outside of a week two competition against the Tennessee Volunteers, the NC State schedule is as manageable as anybody's in the Atlantic Coast Conference. They've got Tennessee in week two. They've got Clemson in week four. That might be the most difficult challenge, as that game is on the road in Death Valley. After those two competitions, Northern Illinois, Wake Forest, Syracuse, Cal, Stanford, Duke, Georgia Tech, and North Carolina. NC State, if you want the prediction, I think NC State is going 10-2 this year. We talked about this earlier in the show. Is there a path for the Atlantic Coast Conference to get more than one team in? And I said the answer is yes, but it would have to be a setup that is, frankly, fortunate for an ACC school. It might be NC State. Might be NC State with that schedule. I would pay attention to that. Here's another one. What about Oklahoma? Lonzo has talked about the Boomer Sooners a number of times this offseason, and I think it's very fair to have done so. I think Brent Venables' squad is going to be better this year. I think I will absolutely trust a Brent Venables-led defense, and Oklahoma's got a good one. I do have a question a little bit about their quarterback position. Of course, they lose Dylan Gabriel, who is on his way. Jackson Arnold, Dylan Gabriel, now a Heisman favorite at Oregon, by the way. But Jackson Arnold, a sophomore out of Denton, Texas, will get the nod to start at quarterback more than likely this year. Last year, had 18 of 24 for 75%, 202 yards, and two touchdowns across the season. Appeared in five games last year that included the Valero Alamo Bowl, where he went 26 of 45 for 361. The kid's got a gun on him. Can he read a defense? Can he work the offense? Can he be consistent? We are going to find out, but the defense is going to be good, and the ability to run the ball is going to be there for Oklahoma this year. Now, as we have mentioned a number of times, obviously they have a big issue in that it is their debut year in the Southeastern Conference. Let me ask this question real quick. Lonzo, your thoughts on this. Do you think that teams in a new conference, Oregon, USC in the Big Ten, Texas, Oklahoma in the SEC, Do you think that the old conference members are going to put a little extra oomph in welcoming the new teams to the conference? Do you think that Ohio State is going to have a little more pop in the pad? Do you think that LSU and Alabama are going to lay the lumber a little bit more firm when they welcome Oklahoma and Texas, Ohio State and USC into the new conferences? Or do you think they will be treated like any other ballgame?
Oh, they're definitely going to put some more into it. But here's the thing, especially with the SEC and the Big Ten teams that were added, there are contenders that were added. So you're going to have to put a little something extra on there, or you're going to lose the game and lose a conference, like in the case of Ohio State or Michigan or Georgia, who have had a run of it lately. They're going to be challenged right away. So you definitely got to let them know that this is Big Ten country or this is SEC country.
I mean, it just means more, I have been told. I do wonder if that is a factor in all of this. I do wonder if some of the squads that are joining a new conference affiliation this year don't get the welcome wagon rolled out for them, and not in a way that they want it, right? I do wonder when FSU goes to SMU, the first time that Clemson plays Cal or Stanford, especially when they come to the house. I do wonder when Michigan takes on USC, when Oregon and Ohio State square off later in the year. I do wonder if those schools might have a little something extra for the new kid on the block, might have a little extra punch, a little extra pop, a little extra pizzazz when it comes to trying to run these teams off the field to say welcome to the conference. So those are two teams right out of the gate, NC State, Oklahoma, that I am interested in as potential surprise playoff teams when the season comes to its conclusion. I'll give you a couple more later on in the show, but we do have to run back to a break to get back on the clock when we come back. Week zero of the college football season has arrived. The season officially underway tomorrow. So, what should you be looking out for tomorrow? What should you have eyes on tomorrow? A viewer's guide to week zero when we come back on the Rob Brown Show on the Fan Upstate. Rob Brown Show rolls on, wrapping up our numero dos here on the radio broadcast. Let's get to some week zero storylines to follow, I guess, is what we're going to go with. Let's go to some week zero storylines to keep an eye. I've been sitting here doing this show with my collar halfway popped up, and none of you were going to tell me that. Sitting here like half a fraternity Delta Bravo, and none of you were going to go, hey, Rob, you look like a moron on screen. Not one of you was going to give me the heads up.
Dude, you've been having that kind of morning, so it's like I thought you did it on purpose.
No.
It's like I kind of, I mean business today. Get out of my way. That type of
Listen,
thing.
Listen, as preppy golf brunch mimosa guy as I am, if you ever see me, Lonzo, with my collar popped, please be fully aware that it is me having been kidnapped and trying to send out a distress beacon is what that is. No.
All right. All right. In honesty,
live stream broadcasting to the world with my collar accidentally popped, dude, and none of you said anything.
Dude, your collar, part of your collar, the majority of the show has been blocked out by your pop filter. So there's no way that anyone would have noticed.
I noticed and I hate it and I'm mad at it.
Okay, side, you're saying the side that was most visible was popped up?
Yeah,
side. It's also white. It's white and you're very pale. Okay, so there's, because it's probably the light that makes you, and you're wearing a white hat. I mean, you know, it's yeah.
Week zero storylines. We open it up with the Noles and the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets. The most interesting thing about this game so far is the fact that the line has dropped by an entire field goal. Opened at Florida State minus 13.5. The line is now at minus 10.5. What does that mean? Well, it means that a large chunk of the betting public believed in Georgia Tech out of the gate. Now, the line has moved to 10.5. And it is now settled at 10.5. Vegas has effectively gotten what they've wanted, which is that right now, about 65% of the money in the last 2 days since this line settled at 10.5 has come in on Florida State. They will let this line sit right here until the tickets are level, until the money bet on both sides is level. Once it gets to level, I would expect to see this line move back to 11.5. But let's talk about the game itself. The first thing we're looking for, obviously, I don't think there's any way to put it, DJ Uiagalelei. That's the big question. The big question is, will we see a new and improved DJ? Will we see a better version of DJ than we saw at Oregon State? Because, yes, I think you can argue that the DJ Uiagalelei that we saw at Oregon State was better than the DJ Uiagalelei we saw at Clemson. However, I do not think that the DJ Uiagalelei that we saw at Oregon State was national championship quarterback material. I think he's a guy that can get Florida State to a bowl game. I think he's a guy that can get Florida State competitive within the ACC. Is he a guy that I think Florida State can trust to run through the playoffs if they were to win the ACC and make it? I don't know that I can go that far just yet. I would keep an eye on this. Georgia Tech is a good test for the remade offense of Florida State. Brent Key has put a lot of dudes on the defensive side of the football. Remember, he's got a couple of guys that he has taken from some more traditional powerhouse schools, added to both sides of the football. That is a team that went from 3-9 in 2021 to 5-7 in 2022 to 7-6 last year under Brent Key. And oh, by the way, over on the other side of the ball from DJ Uiagalelei is Haynes King. Threw for over 2,800 yards and rushed for over 700 yards for a combined 37 total touchdowns last year. Haynes King is the quarterback. Jamal Haynes is the running back. He is back after rushing for over 6 yards per carry last year for this Yellow Jacket offense. They also bring back their two leading tacklers on defense. They do have to replace a good chunk of the pass rush. They have some talent that they have brought in to do that, both on the recruiting trail and through the transfer portal this year. But this is a unit that will take some time to gel. That is both good and bad news for DJ Uiagalelei and the Florida State offense. On one hand, he's not going to get the catch-up, the tune-up, like a lot of teams do in week one when they play FCS squads. DJ Uiagalelei is going to be staring down the face of a team that won 7 games last year, and a lot of it had to do with a better-than-anticipated pass rush, a rebuilt pass rush this year, but a team that showed last year that it can get to the quarterback. This game is going to be a litmus test for Florida State. If you are a Clemson fan, this is one you are going to want to be tuned into. Why? Because this is likely, at least according to Vegas, your primary competition for the ACC crown, your primary competition to earning that bid for the ACC conference champion in the college football playoffs this year. And as we mentioned earlier, there is a path for the ACC to get multiple teams in. I will say that if the ACC championship was to result in two teams with one loss. Let's say Florida State beats Clemson in the regular season, Clemson beats Florida State in the ACC championship, and vice versa. If Clemson was to beat Florida State in the regular season, but the Noles were to claim the conference crown in the championship game, I do think you would get two teams in at that point. If you have two teams that end the season at 12-1, one of them wearing the crown, the other having beat that team in the regular season, there's a very good chance you get in. I will say that if one team ends with a record of 11-2 and the other team ends 13-0, obviously the 13 team is going. I don't know that an 11-2 ACC team is guaranteed anything. I am not saying that they won't go. I'm just not comfortable saying that they will at this point. This is your main source of competition in this conference if you're a Clemson fan, and that makes this game, to me, if you are a fan of Los Tigres, a must-watch football contest. 4 o'clock, Montana State is at New Mexico. Why is this one interesting? Well, there's a very good chance that this could be the first FCS over FBS win of the season. Montana State enters the season number 4 in the FCS preseason poll behind only South Dakota State, North Dakota State, and Montana. They bring back a quarterback who leads a rushing attack with 8.1 yards per carry as a rusher last year, while splitting time with former Wyoming quarterback Sean Chambers. That game could just be upset alert for an FBS team. 8 o'clock, SMU, SMU, taking on Nevada. The Mustangs playing their first game as members of the ACC. They take on a Nevada team that is rebuilding. Why is this one interesting? Well, because of what Lonzo has been saying since ACC Media Days. Rhett Lashley might have this team contending for an ACC title in their very first year. Outside, as we have mentioned a couple of times this week, outside of back-to-back games against FSU and Louisville, the Mustangs might have the easiest ACC schedule of all. Preston Stone at quarterback, one of the most productive passers in the country last season, and should be able to go bananas, B-A-N-A-N-A-S, against the Wolfpack in week 0 football. Jalen Knighton, a good, strong back, and was one of the team's top receivers last year as well. This SMU team is balanced. They can run it right at you. They can also pull it and throw it to the outside. Rhett Lashley told us at ACC Media Days that is the game plan, to keep you off balance, to keep you looking around, to keep you wondering where the next attack was going to come from. But if this team is going to prove that they are going to be an ACC contender out of the gate, I think that it behooves them to have a stellar start. I think it behooves them to put everyone on notice in game number 1. They enter this game as a 24.5 point favorite. Yes, Nevada's bad. They are rebuilding. It is a hard boot reset for this team. But for SMU, if you want me to believe that you are a team that should be taken seriously as a conference contender, you're going to need to go cover that number. You're going to need to go up against the Nevada team that is reeling and do something with it. Keep an eye on this game on Preston Stone. Keep an eye in this game on Jalen Knighton. Those are the two guys that could be the big-time impact players in the SMU offense, and those are two guys that could be big-time impact players in the ACC this year. I am not ready to say that SMU is going to be competing for the ACC title this year. I am not ready to say that they are up there on the level of Clemson and Florida State yet. But I am saying if they come out and they win this game by that 28 points-ish that they are expected to, that all of a sudden Clemson and Florida State had better start looking backwards over their shoulders at the Mustangs. Those are the first three games. Of course, we do have the Delaware State-Hawaii game that night as well. Going to be a tough one to watch. It's apparently a pay-per-view game. I mean, that makes sense. All of the adult entertainment usually that comes on at midnight, like $9.95 a viewing. So that checks out. That makes sense. All right, we'll talk some more college football later on in the radio broadcast. Next hour, we get a little baseball in here. I do have a developing NASCAR for a story for you and more. It's all coming up on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate after Lonzo, who should get paid $9.99 a minute by you to listen to this sports flash.
I got nothing. The Atlanta Braves won the second game in the overall series over the Philadelphia Phillies with a 3-2 win last night on the back of a nine strikeout night from rookie Spencer Schwellenbach. I'll get it right by the third one. The Braves had 10 hits, including 3-for-3, one home run night from Adam Duvall. Atlanta decreased the Phillies divisional lead to 6 games, but a Mets win has them just 1.5 games up on the final wildcard spot. Chicago Bears ended their preseason with 34-21 win over the Chiefs on the back of a 9-of-13, 106-yard effort from backup Brett Rippon. Running back Velus Jones Jr. had 13 carries for 111 yards, and Tyler Scott had 99 yards of rushing. Tune in tonight at 7 p.m. as the Burns Rebels get the high school football season started as they head to T.L. Hanna to take on the Yellow Jackets. It's Burns versus T.L. Hanna tonight at 7.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.